Okay, the Ibn Ezra on this week's Sedra, Parshas Chayesara, when the Torah discusses the Avram acquiring from Ephraim and from the Bnei Ches, the Maris HaMachpelah, as a burial site for Sarah, and for that matter, for all the Avos and the Imahos. So the Ibn Ezra asks, what is the purpose? Why does the Torah tell us all about it? And the Ibn Ezra gives two answers. One answer the Ibn Ezra gives is because to tell us, to show us that Eretz Yisrael is a skula. The Eretz Yisrael has special effects for both the Chaim and the Mesim. In other words, the fact that Avram wanted to bury Sarah in Eretz Yisrael, and you see to what degree he was involved in arranging for the burial of Sarah in Eretz Yisrael. That's to show how significant Eretz Yisrael is, not only for the living, but for those who die also, for their burial in Eretz Yisrael. And then the second answer he gives is, in other words, you see to a certain degree the fulfillment of the Havtacha, of the commitment of HaKadosh Baruch Hu to Avram Avinu, in partial manner, the fulfillment of that Eretz Yisrael will become his and will be given to him for his descendants. The Ramban rejects Ibn Ezra. He says, as far as the first reason, he says, if Sarah had died in Mitzrayim, as Yaakov did, and the Torah would tell us about how Avram tried to bring Sarah's body, to bring Sarah's Aron to Eretz Yisrael, to bury her in Eretz Yisrael, then we would see the significance of burial in Eretz Yisrael. But where did Sarah die? Sarah died in Hebron. So what's the proof that Eretz Yisrael is of has such special significance for both the Chaim, the living, and the dead? That's what you would naturally expect. You would naturally expect the person to be buried in the area that they died. And then, as far as the second answer is concerned, so the Ramban says, the fulfillment of the Haftacha, the fulfillment of the promise, was fulfilled with his descendants, not so much with Avram. Now, the truth of the matter is that, and because of that, the Ramban says that the purpose of this parsha in the Torah that talks about the sale in detail and about the negotiations that took place between Ephron and the Bnei Ches on one hand and Avram on the other hand was to show the great honor that Avram had. You see how the Bnei Ches talked to Avram, Nisi Elokim Atobah Socheinu, you are a prince of God in our midst. And they're interested, Chorus Mesecha, you could bury Sarah in the best of our graves. So you see the interest, the high regard that the Bnei Ches had for Avram Avinu. However, I think we could answer the Ibn Ezra with two points. One is, and it's based, you take a look at the Torah, and the Torah tells us how Avram, and the Torah emphasizes over and over that it wasn't just from Ephron that Avram acquired the Maras Machpelah. Avram also acquired the Maras Machpelah from all of the Bnei Ches. And the Torah emphasizes so much that it was done in front of the Bnei Ches. And Avram asked the Bnei Ches to intercede. He purposely asked them to intercede with Ephraim. Rizka Rav says, Avram could have talked to Ephraim himself. Why was it important to talk through the Bnei Ches? And the Torah emphasizes to a large degree that the Maras HaMachpelah and the area outside the Maras HaMachpelah left or went up from Ephron and from the Bnei Ches. And the Brisker Rav says, in a certain sense, the Torah is trying to emphasize, not only did Ephron surrender, of course, for good payment, his rights to the area, but the Bnei Ches also surrendered their rights to Bnei Ches to Avram Avinu over that area. Because, you know, you have individual owners, and you have national owners. My house is my property, but the government has control over my property as well. And Avraham, according to the Brisker Rav, was concerned not just what about the ownership of Ephron, but the control that the Bnei Ches had over that area as well. And the way it's brought down in the name of the Brisker Rav, he was concerned that they might decide to use that area for other projects. And legally, by their law, they might have had a right to do it. So he wanted not only the Ephron to surrender his rights to the land, but he wanted the Bnei Ches to surrender their rights to the land. I think that we could add something to what the Brisker Rav said. It wasn't just a concern, although that certainly is a concern. And I assume that perhaps part of the reason the Brisker Rav suggested this explanation was perhaps the concern that we see that took place in the European cemeteries when the cemeteries were used by the different governments for all kinds of projects. I know in Brisk, on the site of the basic forests, the government made a stadium. So it's not just the individual ownership over the land that was a concern, but the governmental control over the land was a concern. But I think there might be another point there also. And that is that by the Bnei Ches surrendering the land, it ceased to be the area of the Bnei Ches. It became completely the land of Avraham Avinu. And it's in that manner that the fulfillment of the Haftacha to Avraham Avinu was niskayim, was fulfilled. The commitment to Avraham Avinu was fulfilled. If Avraham Avinu had just bought the land, in the way somebody buys property, That's not the way the Haftacha was made. The Haftacha was made in the sense that the Jewish, that this land will not only have the private ownership of the Jewish people, of a Jew, the different areas would have private ownership of Jewish people, but nationally it will belong to the Jewish people as well. And while we could suggest that halachically, all of the lands might have already nationally belonged to the Jewish people because of the Haftacha. But part of the Haftacha was not just that halachically it will belong, but the ownership of the Jewish people over the land as a nation will be actualized and to a certain degree recognized. And by the B'nai Chesh surrendering the land of the area of the Maras Machpelah, and this was a symbol for the future, because when Sarah and Avram and the Avos and the Imos are buried there, as not part of the Bnei Chesh, as not part of Eretz Canaan, but as a separate land. So that's identified with the future. So in a sense, it wasn't just a sale in itself. It was the beginning of the fulfillment of the Haftacha to Avraham Avinu. And then as far as the Eretz Yisrael being a skula, having some special effect, positive effect, not just for those living there, but even for those buried there, we could suggest that it's true. We would have expected Avram to bury Sarah there because Sarah died there. But the fact that the Torah focuses so much and devotes so much space to it, it was for the Torah to emphasize there's something very important here. If it was only to reveal the facts, the Torah would have told us Avram bought the land from Ephron, and he buried Sarah there. But the fact that the Torah went into detail to describe how the transaction took place and how the burial took place, it was to emphasize there's an important thing here. There's an important point the Torah is trying to emphasize, the importance of it. But I want to explain how that's done. How do we see in the fact that the Torah goes into detail, that the Torah is emphasizing that there's something special to be learned here? Now, The Torah tells us regarding when Avram sends Eliezer to Haran to seek out a wife from Yitzchak, and the negotiations that take place between Besuel and Lavan, between the brother of Rivka and the father of Rivka and Eliezer. And the Torah goes into detail. And it has Eliezer repeat all the details that took place at the time of the well, at the well where he first met Rivka. The Torah, the Midrash tells us, Yafa Sichashan So Abde Yavos Yosemi Tarasin Shalpanim. The words, the conversation of the Abde Yavos, of Eliezer repeating over all the details that took place, is nicer in the eyes of HaKadosh Baruch Hu than the Taras and Shavanim. Because sometimes when it comes to a halacha, when it comes to a Jewish law, it's the Jews from one extra letter or one less letter in the Torah. But here the Torah devotes so much space telling us about Eliezer's conversation and repeating the details that took place, which the Torah already told us, how Eliezer met Rivka, and the conversation that went on with Rivka, and how Rivka drew the water and offered water for him and for his camels, and the Gemilas Chesed, the kindness that she showed. And then besides telling us as it's taking place, the Torah then tells us how Eliezer repeats all of this as a sign that Rivka was the one chosen for Yitzchak. So Yofa Sichasim, we have to understand what's the idea, but a law that sometimes is deduced from one extra letter, one less letter. Now, the answer is, now we have to understand, we have two types of Mesoras. We have a Mesora. We have a tradition that was given over, that began with Avraham Avinu, that began with our ancestors, with our patriarchs and our matriarchs, with Avram and Sarah, with Yitzchak and Rivka, with Yaakov, with Rachel and Leah. And then we have a Mesora, we have a tradition that to a certain degree begins with Moshe Rabbeinu. What is the difference between the Mesora of the Yavos and Yimos on one hand, of the matriarchs and patriarchs on one hand, and that of Moshe Rabbeinu? How do we refer to Moshe Rabbeinu? Moshe Rabbeinu, Moshe our teacher. But, however, the Yavos, the patriarchs and matriarchs, they're called our fathers and mother. A teacher teaches primarily intellectually. He gives over information. Children learn from a parent by example and environment. Now, in last week's Seder, I've mentioned it many times. HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, when he decides that he is going to destroy Sodom and Amorah because of the way the people in Sodom and Amorah acted, the murder that would take place there, their attitudes to people who were poor, to visitors, their disdain of kindness, so the Torah says, Hamachasa nimi Avraham. Am I going to hide from Avram about my plans about Sodom and Amorah? But Avraham is going to be a great nation. ki yedativ, because I love him. Why? Lemana sheyetzaves banav es beisu achrav, because he commands his children and his family after him. So Avram has to know about God's plans of destroying Sodom and Amorah. Because down the line, generations later, he's going to be a great nation. Because God loves him, because he commands his children after him. Back writer. Seems very strange. Just because Abram, generations later, will become a great nation. So God has to tell Abram about his plans to destroy Sodom and Amorah. What's the idea? The idea is, now I once heard from my father, not in regard to this question, but just in explaining the pasuk itself, "Leman Asher Yitzaves Banav Beiso Achrav," and I've mentioned this I don't know how many times, he commands his children and his family after him. After him doesn't just mean, although it certainly means that also, how to act after he's no longer there. But after him means he commands by example. There are people who command by word of mouth, who give lectures. But Avram, certainly, he taught. He taught his family. He taught mankind. Not just by lectures. Akarav. By his example. And it was important, especially when it comes to character traits. I think what my father said certainly applies. Character traits cannot be taught through a book. Character traits have to be taught by example. Other things also have to be taught by example. So, but certainly character traits. And the Torah mentions many incidents about Avram Avinu to keep Avram alive in order that future generations should learn from him. There are many things that can't be taught in the way legal situations are taught. It has to be taught by example. And it's very interesting. The Ramban at the Akedah in last week's Sedra, he says, Torah says that God tested Avram. And the Ramban asked the question, why did God test Avram? God certainly knew that Avram would, so to say, would pass the test, that Avram would submit to the command to put his son on the Mizbeach. Why was it necessary? So the Ramban says, Lahotzi mehakoach alapolo, to take it from the state of the potential into the state of the actual. Now, and what does that mean? So the way my father explained it was, and that's what it seems from the Ramban, that yes, HaKadosh Baruch Hu knew, but sometimes we don't know ourselves, our own abilities. And because we do not know our own abilities, that limits our accomplishments. So the Torah commanded Avram. Avram did not know his own abilities. And my father would say it's interesting that it's mentioned that Avram, only after the Akedah, sent his son, according to the Medrash, sent his son to the yeshiva of Shem Bever. In other words, Avram had a son. The time he was 100 years old, it was hard for him to separate it from his son. But after the Akedah, Avram realized his own potential. And he sent him to the yeshiva of Shem Bever, whatever the nature of that was. And so, in a sense, there are many things that can only be that's how my father explained it. I think there's another answer, even though if the Ramban probably meant what my father said, I want to suggest another answer along the same lines. We cannot teach our children by our example. The function of the Avos, the function of the Imos, the function of the patriarchs and matriarchs was to teach. How do parents teach? Parents teach primarily by example. Parents don't distribute books. They don't have a blackboard in their house. But they teach by the environment that they create. And they teach by the example that they set. Not by the show that they make, but by the example that they set in the way they live their lives. But the problem was Avram, he will be a great nation. How will the Jewish people learn from the example of Avram? So the Torah preserves these stories. Shouldn't say stories, these incidents that we should learn from Avram Avinu. And this is that we learn from Avram Avinu. Now it's very interesting that the beginning of this week's Sedra, the Torah tells us that Avram Avinu that Sarah lived Me'ah Shana Ve'Esrim Shana V'Sheva Shanim. She lived 127 years. That she lived 127 years. Now, 127 years. So, Me'ah Shana Ve'Esrim Shana V'Sheva Shanim. So, Rashi cites the Medrash that at the age, it's based on a Medrash Rabbah, that the age of 100, she was as free from sin as she was at the age of 20. And at the age of 20, she was to beauty as she was at the age of 7. Now we have to understand this Maimer Chazal. It's very strange. The Torah here is giving us a hesped, a eulogy on Sarah. And say, at the age of 20, she was beautiful at the age of 7. Is that the eulogy that the Torah wants to give us about Sarah? How beautiful she looked. There is no doubt that Sarah apparently had a special demeanor in the way she looked. You see, that even at an elderly age, Paro and Avimelech were interested in her. But is this the Hespet that you would expect the Torah to give on Sarah, the first matriarch of the Jewish people? And then secondly, and this is not my question, it's have a sefer of some of the Balei HaTosfos, some Chumash. A lady at the age of 20 is considered more beautiful than a girl at the age of 7. So what is the Torah telling us? That at the age of 7, she was more beautiful, that at the age of 20, she was as beautiful as at the age of 7. She was too beauty as at the age of 7. What does that mean? But I think the simple explanation is that there is, and also I just want to add one other point. The Mefarshim are somewhat troubled why 20 is used as the symbol of innocence. Now, it's true that many sins that are committed before the age of 20 do not have the same consequences from a punishment perspective as sins that are committed, and all this is in a limited way, of course, after the age of 20. But still, that should be used as the symbol of innocence is somewhat troubling. So I think what the explanation is, there's no doubt that a woman at the age of 20 is more beautiful than a girl at the age of 7. But the beauty that is associated with a girl at the age of 7 is identified with a certain sense of innocence under normal circumstances, that the beauty of a woman at the age of 20 is not identified. And I think that's really what the Torah is telling us. The Torah is telling us that although at the age of 20, Sarah was a very beautiful woman, but nevertheless, that beauty was associated with a certain sense of innocence that she had at the age, the same sense of innocence that she had at the age of 7. And that sense of innocence, perhaps not to the same extent in terms of its association with beauty, Sarah had at the age of 100 as well. Basically, what the Torah is telling us, that Sarah remained innocent throughout her whole life. What's the idea? The idea is that every stage in a person's life is associated with positive traits and negative traits. When a person is younger, when a person is in their youth, so there's a certain sense of innocence. That's a positive trait. But that comes together with a sense of immaturity, which is not always a positive trait. And then when a person goes from their years of youth, of being a youngster, and they go into their teenage years or young adult years, they begin to lose that sense of innocence on one hand, but they become more mature on the other hand. Sarah was special in the fact that Sarah was able to take the positive traits of one period of her life and bring them into the next period of the life. Now, I think, and so in a sense, the Torah is telling us that the sense of innocence that Sarah had when she was younger, she had and perhaps even became more intensified as she matured, as she became older. It was the same sense of innocence. As the Ramban says, Kulan Shavin Latov. All the years of her life, it was the same thing. And it's interesting, Rashi, the Ramban seems to have some questions about it, but Rashi at the end of this week's Sedra says the same thing about Avram. Avram was had a sense of innocence when he was young, and then in his adult years, he had that same sense of innocence, and he had that same sense of innocence when he became older as well. So the idea is to take the traits that are associated with an earliest time into a later time. I saw in the Chumash Toras Chaim, they bring in the name of Rav Sadia Gaon. The Rav Sadia Gaon says that just like we say that at the age of 20, Sarah had the traits of 7. And at the age of 100, she had the traits of 20. She was able to take the traits, the positive traits of one period of her life and bring it into the next period of her life. The reverse is also true, that Sarah was able to take the positive traits of when she was 100 years old and bring them and somehow have it when she was 20. Shouldn't say take, because she didn't have it yet. She didn't have those years yet. But somehow the traits that are associated with the elderly years, the positive traits that are associated with the elderly years, she was able to take. She was able to have when she was younger. And in a sense, that's the Kulan Shavin Latov, all the years of her life. She had these positive traits. When she was younger, she had the positive traits that are usually associated with older years. And she was young, she had the positive traits that were so associated with the younger years. Now, the question is, how is it possible for such a thing to happen? How is it possible to have that? And the answer, I think, is very simple. Because we learn from our elders. We associate with our elders. And we learn from them. And in a sense, this is the idea that I expressed before. The idea, Lamanashi Itzabez, Bonavez Beso Akrav. This is the idea of family. That we learn from our elders. But the question is, but Sarah and Avram, they were the firstborns. How is it possible that Sarah and Avram, from whom the Daler, according to Rav Sadia Gaon, they had the traits that are associated with elderly years? So we could suggest that there were certain positive traits that Terach had, that Avram got, that Sarah got from her parents. And she was able to distinguish between the positive traits and the negative traits. And we could also suggest that in addition to the positive traits and the negative traits, also life experiences. People undergo experiences. Sometimes the experiences are unfortunately not very good experiences, but the experiences, in a sense, have the effect of making younger people mature much quicker. And certainly Avram and Sarah, even though the Ramban is somewhat difficult, the Ramban says that this trait that Sarah had, it was only by Sarah and not by Avram. But the Rashi is clearly to the contrary. The life experiences had the effect of inculcating in them, even when they were younger, the experiences, the attitudes, the positive traits that are usually associated with later years. Now, but in any case, part of the way is Ilman Ashiyat Sabez Bonav Beso Afrav. Sometimes, even parents who grow up in a society that is not a good society, they have positive traits. And a child could sometimes learn and disassociate the positive traits from the negative traits and learn from the positive traits of the parents. It's not exactly a manashi etzaves bana beso achrav, but it's from the experience of the parents that they become more mature, that they get, that they somehow become inculcated with traits that are identified with later years. But it's interesting, the Torah, when this is what Chazal mean, our sages mean, that yofa sichason shel avde yavos, yosami tarasin shel banim, because Torah law, teres hakasim psukim, there is a limitation what they can teach. But example, that can teach certain things that Xeris HaKosovs can't teach. So the Torah keeps the others alive. The Torah keeps the examples alive that we should be able to learn from their examples. And even the Avdei Avos, who are very close, we learn from their example also. But the question is, why emphasize May Avdei Avos? Now, a number of years ago, I met someone who was a member, says was a relative of the Chafetz Chaim's family. Didn't tell me exactly how he was related. But he told me that whenever the Chafetz Chaim would see the shamish of Reb Chaim, the person who took care of Reb Chaim, in the old days, every Rav, the Rav of each town, had a shamish who attended to the needs of the Rav of the town, who accompanied him to his meetings. So whenever the Chafetz Chaim would see the shamish of Reb Chaim, he would stand up. I don't know that the Chafetz Chaim necessarily stood up. Maybe he did. For all the Talmidim of Reb Chaim, those who heard his shiurim and everything, apparently there were things that the shamish of Reb Chaim, who observed Reb Chaim, was able to give over either through the way he acted or even when he would tell over about Reb Chaim, that one couldn't get from the Talmidim who sat at his shiurim. And perhaps that's the reason the Chofetz Chaim would stand up for him. And perhaps we could suggest that that's why the Torah tells us about the Avdei Avos, because Eliezer, especially Eliezer, the way he acted to a large degree was the way Avraham acted, because he observed Avraham close up, not just from a distance, but close up. Because he observed him close up, the way he acted, the way he talked, that in itself taught us things that we wouldn't be able to learn from Gzeiras HaKasuz. But when it comes to example, the Torah has to go into detail, because it can't just use one letter. One letter, one extra letter, one less letter doesn't teach by example. It doesn't keep the person alive. It tells us of a law. But there are many things that cannot be given over just by a law. So when the Torah goes into detail, the Torah, and in telling us how something took place, the Torah is going out of its way to say there is something to learn here. And I think that that's the idea here also. When the Torah tells us, when the Torah goes into detail in telling us about Avram's involvement in acquiring the Sada, it's telling us, because it goes into detail, the Torah is not just giving us information. The Torah is telling us, you have to learn from his example. The fact that the Torah goes into detail to tell us about how Avram was so much involved in acquiring the land to bury Sarah, and that land should not be associated or identified with the former owners of the land. It's to tell us that Eretz Yisrael is a Sgula. If Sarah was buried there because that's where she died, Avram Avinu did not have to acquire the land in such a way that it should be recognized as not being associated with the Bnei Ches, not being associated with Ephraim. But Avraham Avinu does not bargain with Ephraim. Anything to show that any control or ownership over the land, and the Torah goes into detail to emphasize it. The Torah goes into detail to show that Avraham Avinu did not want the burial associated with Eretz Canaan at all. It had to be seen as burial in Eretz Yisrael. It had to be viewed as burial in Eretz Yisrael. And because the Torah went into detail, the Torah was teaching it by example, there is something special to learn here. And that also, I think, is the fulfillment of the Jewish people, of Avram having the fulfillment of the commitment that he will have Eretz Israel, because to a certain degree, of course, legally, halachically, Eretz Israel might have been Avram Avinu's already. But Avram wanted to demonstrate the fact that he acquired that land as not under the jurisdiction and recognizes not under the jurisdiction of the Bnei Ches of Eretz Canaan. That was the beginning of the fulfillment of the Haftacha in actualization that was given to Avraham Avinu. So I think the Ibn Ezra is emphasizing this point. And the lesson I think that we have to learn also from here is that Avram, when he demonstrated, he was demonstrating not just for his time, he was demonstrating for the future. We have to understand when Avram acquired Eretz Yisrael, he didn't just acquire it for his generation. He acquired it for all generations to come. And we have to realize that that our generation, when we deal with the future of Eretz Yisrael, we're not just dealing with private property. We're dealing with the question of Eretz Yisrael for all generations. Okay.
If anyone has a question, please put it in the chat. One comment, it was earlier in the share, but then at the 2 minutes ago, used the word jurisdiction.
Yeah. Okay.
Someone wanted to say that when Avram bought it, he took it out of the jurisdiction. He thought that was a word for the idea you were trying to say.
Yeah, okay. All right. So I used it. Okay. He was Mechavin El Amos.
And then you used the word Segula several times. What would be the best way that you would translate Segula?
I don't know. It has some
special
kind
of belonging.
It's a special effect. A special effect. Makes an impact.
So is that's a different word than Klal Yisrael being an Am Segula? Or we're an Am Segula because we have to impact the world? Or it seems that we're Segula to Hashem?
Yeah, okay. It's unique, I guess. It's something special. Something special. That's the way I would extend it. Something special.
Did you say that the Chafetz Chaim stood for the Gabbai of Reb Chaim because he heard a share of Reb Chaim, you think?
No, he didn't hear a share of Reb Chaim. Talmidim heard more share of Reb Chaim. I don't know if he heard a share of Reb Chaim. I didn't say he stood for Reb Chaim because he heard a share. On the contrary, he stood for Reb Chaim because he observed Reb Chaim.
Oh, he observed Reb Chaim, okay.
That's part of the mana shid savas bonavas basal afra, the things that cannot be given over in shir. As a matter of fact, I forgot to mention, there was a letter, my brother published part of the letter. There's a letter that my grandfather sent to the son-in-law of the Chafetz Chaim. He sent a letter of Nicham Avelin to my grandfather after Reb Chaim passed away. And my grandfather said to him, he said, the yeshiva world, they can have a nechama because the Torah of Reb Chaim will be given over for generations to come. They can have a nechama because his chedushim will be published. He says, but we who knew Reb Chaim, we can't have a nechama because the things that we receive Reb Chaim are not things that can be published. And that's L'man Asher Tzavez Bonavez Beso Acharav. That's what my grandfather wrote this, the son-in-law of the Chavetz Chaim.
Why is there, of all places, that burial place that Avram bought, why is that such disputed in ownership?
Probably because it symbolizes the Jewish people's association with Eretz Yisrael more so than from its origin, more so than anywhere else. On the contrary, sometimes our enemies understand things that many Jews do not understand.
Why is, according to the Medrash, at least part of Esav is buried in Maris Machpelah, but Rachel is not buried in Maris Machpelah?
Well, why? It's two separate questions. Why Rachel is not buried in Maris Machpelah? So Rashi cites the Medrash because it was necessary for her to be buried along the road. So the Jewish people, when they're going out to Golus, so they'll stop by Kever Rachel and be mispala and daven there. And in a sense, what seems to me, the idea is, when you take a look at the life of Yaakov, after the life of Yaakov, Yaakov is both outside Eretz Yisrael and inside Eretz Yisrael. It's true, Avram, Before Parshas Lech Lecha, he's outside Eretz Yisrael, but there's really very little focus at that point. Then he's just a descendant of Noah. But from the point that Avram becomes Lech Lecha Me'atzcha Me'molatcha, there's a question whether that was the two times he came to Eretz Yisrael or one time, but the Lech Lecha itself was the time he stayed in Eretz Yisrael. So the Lech Lecha Me'atzcha Me'molatcha Beis Avicha, Avram doesn't leave Eretz Yisrael. He goes down to Egypt for a short sojourn, he has the Bris Milah, he never leaves Eretz Yisrael. And Yitzchak never leaves Eretz Yisrael. And Yaakov, he spends many years with Laban, and he spends many years in Egypt. So Yaakov is the Yav of Klal Yisrael that is identified both with Eretz Yisrael and Chutz Laaretz. I think Leah, by being buried in the Maris Machpelah, she's the mother of the Jewish people in Eretz Yisrael. Rachel, who's buried on the road, true in Eretz Yisrael, but along the road that the Jewish people are taking when they're leaving Eretz Yisrael, she becomes the mother of the Jewish people of Chutz Laaretz, the mother of the Jewish people of exile. So it was important for them to have a mother who identified with them. Rachel dies as soon as she comes in to Eretz Yisrael. She's identified with Chutz Laaretz. She's the mother of the Jewish people of exile. Now, why Esav's head is buried in the Maris Machpelah? I think because, as I've mentioned many times, that the name of Reb Chaim, Esav was considered a Jew. Esav was considered a Jew, but his descendants were not considered to be Jewish. From Yitzchak will be your descendants. But Esav himself, as the Gemara in Dushin says, Esav Yisrael Mumer, Esav was considered halachically a Jew. So in order, I assume that part of it might be to demonstrate that Esav had was also considered Jewish. And in fact, he had an opportunity, him and Yaakov had the opportunity that one of them, their descendants, would be Jewish. Their descendants would be Jewish. But Esav chose to start his nation right away, whereas Yaakov was more concerned about the future. And he didn't start his nation right away. And Avram was told to Yeh Yehazarecha Beretz Lo Lohem before they established their nation, they're going to be foreigners in a foreign land, and they're going to be slaves. Esav was interested in starting his nation right away. He was more concerned about the future, about the present than the future, whereas Yaakov was more concerned about the future than the present.
Did Avram ever learn in the yeshiva of Shaman Aver, or was Yitzhak the first?
My assumption is that there was some contact. There was some contact besides the fact that after the fighting between the four kings and the five kings, so there was contact between Shem and Avram. There probably was contact earlier. I don't think the idea of Shem Vaver was the perception that we have of the yeshiva right now. It was something altogether different. What exactly it was, I don't know. But it certainly wasn't a building with a sign on it.
Okay, thank you very much. There aren't any other questions now. So thank you, everyone, for joining. Thank you, Rebbe, for the share.
Okay.
And everyone have a great week.